of the mass, I watch the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big tab.
Hello, and this is Doubter 5 at Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm here with Ty, the Wombat. This is a live atheist call-in radio show. We'll be talking about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. We'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. Despite what Steve Martin would have you think, here in the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, we have lots of atheist songs, and you'll hear some of them on this program and generally on the station as they are in our rotation. I'll also be talking about atheist and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville and how you can connect with them. Also, Ty, did you know this, that we have an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville?
What?
Yes.
Since when have we had that? That's amazing.
It's been over 6 years. I'm going on, well, 6 and a half anyway. And we'll talk
Thank
about
you.
How
you
Glad
can... we got a higher number than
Yeah, and in about August or July, it'll go to 7. And
okay.
If you are listening to us and would like to join the conversation, we have a call-in number at 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937. This is WOZO 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Low power.
Now, tonight's topic is, and a lot of people who may be believers listening to this show can identify with this, tonight's topic is, why do atheists care what you believe? I'm on Facebook a lot, and I notice that whenever atheists point out inconsistencies or fallacies in religious thoughts and claims, Christians and believers of other religions will ask the atheists, "You don't believe in God, so why do you care what we believe?" They say, "It's none of your business what we believe. It's a personal and private matter." But that's not really the case, is it? Religious people never seem to shy away from expressing their personal and private beliefs publicly and at every opportunity. They put their God on the money that we all have to use. They buy billboard space to very pointedly tell us that we can either believe in God or get out of their country. They feel positively compelled to push their religion down the throat of every non-believer and different believer that they happen across. They even go so far as to come to our doors or scream at us through bullhorns as we walk down the street in order to share their personal and private beliefs with us, to witness to us. To them, the beliefs of others are not important, but theirs are all important. Anyway, so that sets the premise for the show tonight. Would you like to weigh in on anything that I've said or any points that you might want to make yourself?
Sure. I'll play devil's advocate for a second here. So it seems like you're grouping a lot of different kinds of Christians together in the same boat, whereas I think the majority of Christians are perfectly happy just going to church and coming back home and not getting in anyone's face. So if they have, say, for example, like a necklace that has a cross on it, that's their personal choice to wear it. What's the problem if they have that?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not a problem, and it's perfectly fine. But generally, we don't see those people. They are quiet. But there's one lady that made a point on YouTube that I was watching a video. She said, talking about the Holocaust and Nazis and stuff, it wasn't the silent majority that was causing the problem that riled up everybody and got, you know, the Jews all killed. It was like 10 or 15% of the population. She said that the silent majority in this particular case was ineffectual. It didn't matter because they supported the 10 or 15%. And in America, the people that are out there on the street corners, the people that are telling us that we're going to hell on billboards, the people who are shouting at us and coming to our doors are supported by the people who stay home and stay quiet.
Through inaction?
Through donations.
Through donations as well. So if I'm an atheist and I'm driving down the highway and I see a billboard that says, like, hey, you're going to hell, read your Bible, come to the XYZ church, you know, down the street. Uh-huh. And I see it and I'm like, you know, the only thing on my schedule is it's Sunday, I have to go to work tomorrow, I don't feel like battling this, I'm just going to pretend I didn't see that sign, just like maybe the thousands of other cars that pass this billboard, and try not to make it a big deal and continue to be a good person after I move on with my life.
Well, sure.
Is that a tacit support of what was on that sign?
Well, sure. Let's say that I'm an atheist, and I have I'm driving down the road with my 6-year-old child. You know, he gets religion from his school, his classmates, from his teacher sometimes. And he looks up and sees that billboard, and he says, you know, Dad's wrong. You know, I'm going to hell. All my friends are going to hell unless I change. I mean, they're not happy keeping their thoughts and their beliefs to themselves. They've got to jump out and tell you, you know, that you're going to hell, you're wrong, and that, you know, that they're right, and it's the only way. And if you don't believe with it, you can burn forever.
Well, I mean, you got to think about it. Like, if you think about your religious belief as, like, a tiny little light, do you want to keep it underneath a bowl where no one can see it, or do you want to put it on top of a hill where it could potentially help a lot of people?
Okay, well, that's fine, as long as they don't claim that it's personal and private like they do. And when you challenge their beliefs, or you say, no, you're wrong, I think you're wrong and I have different beliefs and my beliefs don't support yours, then they'll come up and say, you know, why do you care what I believe? My beliefs are personal and private. Let me go ahead and read the next paragraph from my site here. The practitioners of these religions, far from being satisfied with privately practicing their beliefs, actually get their congressional representatives to pass laws that make everyone else live under the strictures of their religions. Gay marriage, for instance. Gay marriage is forbidden in Christianity, but are they satisfied with simply not practicing gay marriage? No, they have to make it illegal for everyone, whether they share their religious beliefs or not. And that goes with all blue laws throughout the country. Some cities you can buy a hammer on Sunday, but you can't buy a nail because you might actually use that nail and do work. But I mean, what business is it of theirs what you do on Sunday if you're not a member of that religion?
Sure, it's like banning the sale of alcohol on Sundays at grocery stores that you'll find in the South. That was something I never even noticed that was a thing until I came down here. And when I saw it, I was like, okay, well, I can understand the rule. And I'm not a drinker myself, but it did seem a little bit of a cross of a line for the entire store policy to accommodate to one religion when a lot of different people could potentially be patrons at that establishment.
Right.
So it crosses a line between personal and private. That's what we're saying. Like, there's a line that says, hey, if you're on the personal and private side, that's fine. If you go to church, you know, you raise your kids, you teach them whatever you want to teach them, but for the most part, you would support your kids if they have questions and you want the best for them. That's fine. That's your personal life. But when you take the way how you raise a kid and apply it to how you raise or, like, how an entire nation should behave, that's crossing a line when you start making laws that everybody has to abide to. Or where does propaganda, though, on that stand? Is that just on the line? Like, I can see someone paying for a billboard and putting it up. If they pay for the billboard, it's their billboard. They can put whatever they want up on it.
Oh, I agree.
How an atheist can buy a billboard.
They can say what they want to on there, but they can't take the stance that once they do that, their beliefs are private and personal because they're not. The fact that they put In God We Trust on everybody's money, no matter if they're Christian or not. I have to carry money in my pocket that says In God We Trust. If I had children, they would see that and say the government itself thinks I'm wrong and thinks I'm going to hell, when that is unconstitutional. However, spineless congressional people, congressmen, fold under the pressure from the religious right and put it on there. Whether they're Christian or not, they still vote for it in order to get the money that they get from the Christian right.
Sure, absolutely. I've had people who I've had a conversation with about their faith, and they point to money and say, for example, well, you know, if God isn't real, why does every dollar bill say, you know, in God we trust? And no one wants to hear about the Coin Act or the Coinage Act from the 1950s in response to the Red Scare. And no one really pays attention to history very much. Doesn't realize that, you know, like about less than 70 years ago, that wasn't even the case on any dollar bill, but that was just a reaction to people during the McCarthy era time to seem less like a communist. But, you know, it's an easy thing to say, hey, well, you know, in Pakistan, the money there has in Allah, or everyone, or inshallah, or, you know, not a faith in Allah, but like it's Allah's will in all things. So, like, are you going to leave it to the money in your region that determines the God that affects your region?
Well,
or
that's really not
objective standard.
That's really not the point. In the Arabic countries, they don't have a constitution that says you can't mix religion and governance. You know, we do. Our articles say that we cannot favor one religion over another, or religion over non-religion.
Sure.
The government has to stay neutral.
And we can thank Obama for that last bit. Yeah, definitely there is respect to a church, a separation between church and state, and not even just a separation between religious and different religions and no favoring, but also no preference for whether you're religious or non-religious, which is the first time we've had that since ever as a country, a recognition of non-religion as a status that's perfectly recognized by the government. So, yeah, I could see where that could be an issue.
Right.
So where do we go with this? Where do we go from here?
Well, I'm not really ready to turn loose of it and say, where do we go forward, because I'm still reading some of the problems that we have with this issue. If the audience would like to follow along, they can go to digitalfreethought.com, click on the blog button, and then look for the article that says, Why Do Atheists Care What You Believe? And I'd like to continue with that for the next two paragraphs. Christians also attempt to suppress the teaching of science, any science that does not support their belief system. Given half a chance, they would outlaw the teaching of evolution, as that has been their position historically. No matter, that is the backbone of modern medicine and taught in every accredited school of higher learning on the planet. I mean, we have fought major legal battles in our higher courts since 1925, where they tried to outlaw the teaching of evolution in our schools. And that is not keeping their personal and private beliefs to themselves. They are trying to kill the idea of evolution in our education system.
So I just want to be more precise with the argument. It's not so much that, because I really, as a biochemist, I pay really close attention to the subject. Right now, so what you're talking about was true maybe about 30 years ago. Now the argument has switched from not being against evolution, but also teaching creationism side by side with evolution, as if they were both legitimate means of explaining how life
The Dover trial took that case to heart, the fact that they wanted to be able to teach that as well. However, you have to admit that the premise that I gave was that given half the chance, they would outlaw the teaching of evolution in America. That's true.
Perfect. Sure, if they could go back to, say, just creationism only, sure, it makes the books a lot easier.
Yeah.
The teacher's lesson plan would be a lot more straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
But right now we have a more insidious problem. Instead of like looking at things scientifically, we have an injection of non-rational understanding of how the universe works being placed side by side on the same mantle to kids from their teachers, who they respect as an authority on the subject, as here's a rational explanation for how the universe works, and here's an unrational explanation. But we're going to favor both of them as if they're equal, when they shouldn't be, especially in a class that's all about rationality.
Right. Right. Well, the thing about it is that they can't even go that far at this point. They cannot say we need to teach creationism in a classroom. Even though they would like to, they know it won't stand up in court. The courts have spoken on this matter. But what they do, since they can't do that, is that they've got to discredit evolution. They do that every chance they can. They hold positions like... You can't break down certain chemical molecular compounds, so irreducible complexity, that's it. So they say evolution doesn't work because of irreducible complexity.
What does that mean?
I'm sorry, Riv just came in, so I had to open the door for him.
Right. Hey, Riv.
Hey,
River. So why don't you explain what irreducible complexity is? Because I'm not familiar with that.
Well,
and I think our listeners would like to know about it.
All right. In the Dover trial, the example that these people used to challenge evolution was what do you call it? It was a single-celled animal or a small-celled animal, bacteria, a flagellum. An animal that propels way through the medium that it exists in using a flagellum. And the flagellum is like a little tail that it wiggles to move it around in the fluid, and that the motor at one end of the bacteria, there's a little motor that turns at it. It's a molecular motor that spins the tail. And I think it was Michael Behe, he said that motor is irreducibly complex. And in other words, if you take away any part of that motor, it will no longer function. Therefore, it had to be created as one whole thing. So that was his argument. And, of course, the biologist tore it apart because you could take away 30-something parts of that and still have a molecular injector. I can't remember what it was called. But in other words, it would still function, but it would have a different function. And that's how evolution works. It takes things that have evolved and use them either as a more sophisticated version of it or for a different version, a different method, a different thing to do.
So, like, for example, irreducible complexity can be, for example, if I were to point to a Tesla smart car, which is a lithium-powered, battery-powered car, uses zero gas. It's one of the most high-tech machines that are on the road right now. It self-drives, has all the bells and whistles. And you can look at that and say, there's no way that couldn't have come about through a stepwise system of errors and trials and errors. That had to just exist by a creator 100%.
Yep.
And then another person could look at that car and say, well, the product actually learned a lot from other trials and errors in the past. I mean, in the beginning, we had cars that were originally running on different kinds of fuel. We didn't immediately go to gas. We were running on steam, and those engines were much larger.
Uh-huh.
Our safety recommendations were evolving over time. We developed airbags, seat belts. Windshield wipers didn't even exist back in the day. We didn't even have batteries for lights. But over time, we developed better computers, better software, better information
right.
of how to protect people while they're driving. And all of that culminated through an evolutionary stepwise pattern to end up to where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
And even where we are now is not the final form of what cars may look like 20 years from now.
No, for sure.
It's all just a transition that we're seeing.
Right.
And, you know, there are a lot of people that can't look at the small picture and accept it for what it is because they may have a time span in their life where it's like everything that happens in my life right now is important, and they may be given a doctrine where everything in their life feels important. And because of that, they can't seem to feel like they're a small piece in what is a very long timeline of very small and meager changes.
Right.
And they themselves are just a part of it.
Yeah. The attorneys,
I can see what you mean.
The attorneys in the Dover trial brought even a better, more simpler example of reducible complexity, basically. One of the attorneys came in wearing a mouse trap as a tie clip. All it had was like three pieces. It didn't have the center little cheese holder. It didn't have the arm that holds the main spring killing device down. But he said, this mousetrap only has five pieces. I've taken away two of them, and it still performs a function. which is the point he was trying to make about the injector, that evolution takes simple things, combines them, makes them better, more complex over time.
Sure.
Yeah. Hey, go ahead, Riff.
So something I think a big misconception people always tend to go over is that it's not survival of the fittest. It's the survival of the good enough.
Yeah, so true.
It's that we find things that we adapt to our environment. That works. Okay, that's good. That's good enough. Let's go to it. Yep. Everywhere else, you have a mutation that happens, and you, with that mutation, you adapt with the environment accordingly. And the ones that survive, and so on, and it's definitely survival of good enough, not survival of the fittest.
Yeah. Basically, you can correct us if we're wrong, but you're a biologist, Ty, but there are two criteria for something to survive in the wild, and that's, one, they've got to put out an awful lot of offspring, progeny, that hopefully will survive, some of them will survive to reproduce, and two, they need to reproduce. Huh?
Yeah, that's the main thing.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
You know, I want to just say one last thing on that mousetrap, just so we can get the analogy home. Like, why was it such a big deal that it was able to show the mousetrap was a really good tie clip, even you took away some parts? The idea behind a mousetrap, about how it works, is it has a lot of parts that, when all put together, is really good at catching mice.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take away some crucial components, you have parts that still work with each other, but may have a function in another area, such as keeping a tip quiet onto your shirt, or shooting spitballs in the air, or a good spring of some sort, or a good metal wood base.
Yeah.
All of these parts have functions apart from each other, but when they come together, they can make a more complex thing. And by taking apart a mousetrap and still finding functions for even the small parts of the mousetrap, in a way that's no longer used as a mousetrap but something else, it shows how evolution can take things that are beside each other, that have separate functions, put them together, and get a whole new, much more complex function.
Right.
And that's
that's
one way of how evolution's been working over time.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool.
And since
it does show that mousetraps are irreducibly compatible, complex.
Mm-hmm. And another thing where religion suppresses science is that a previous pope himself actually said that we should not investigate the early universe. That belongs in the domain of God. The Pope also directly, that Pope is also directly responsible for the thousands of deaths in North America, where he announced that condom use, not North America, North Africa, sorry, where he announced that condom use actually helps to spread the AIDS virus. Therefore, he discouraged condom use in that AIDS-ridden continent. What I'm saying is that Christianity does not keep their beliefs to themselves. They have to put out all this kind of false information and bad information and try to influence other people to join their religion or control them. Anyway, we're getting to the bottom of the hour. I probably need to do a break.
What? Already?
Already?
How about that?
I don't know. You have any final thoughts before we go to the break?
Sure. So I think both sides, we might be lagging on Christians a little bit too, but it also goes to atheists, because there may be atheists out there who believe that Bluetooth headset gives you brain tumors. The whole thing is, science has a purpose, and when you use it, you end up being more informed on certain things, and when you're not informed, you're willing to say you don't know. And the beautiful thing about saying you don't know is you keep yourself from going to leaps of faith where you have to believe in a God who knows all the answers, and you don't have to force yourself to know anything. So it's okay to be informed, and it's okay to say you don't know, as long as you use I don't know as a starting place to start figuring out things.
Right.
And if the book says don't use condoms and you're getting sick, maybe you're not as informed as you'd like to believe.
Yeah. Another thing about atheists, though, is an atheist won't say that it was revealed unto him by Almighty God that Bluetooth headphones give you brain tumors. So, he's using his own opinion. He's not putting it forward as a revelation from the creator of the universe himself.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and take a break. We'll play a little music.
Okay.
We'll talk about it. Before we do, I've got an advertisement or let's say information message from the Rationalists of East Tennessee. But before we do, let's talk about the Atheist Society of Knoxville. The Atheist Society of Knoxville was founded in 2002. It now has over 650 members. You can find it online, and you can join them at their meetup at Taps and Flats on Kingston Pike every Tuesday night around 5:30. We usually go to about 8 for happy hour food, conversation, and fun. Everyone is welcome.
Nice.
Yeah, but as long as you don't preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch, apologies to Matt Dillahunty. You're certainly
not
welcome.
Not necessarily in that order either.
Right, right. Okay, now we're going to the break, and we'll talk about RET. Then we'll hear a song by, it's called Everything's Possible by Roy Bailey, and we'll be right back.
Do you find stories of talking snakes laughable? Do you prefer the scientific method over supernatural beliefs? Are you concerned about religious leaders and organizations imposing their values and rules on your body, your family, and the rest of our society? Well, take comfort in the fact that you're not alone. The Rationalists of East Tennessee meets weekly for fellowship and provides a forum for people who support skeptical thinking and rational discussion of these and other issues. To find out more information or to find out about our next meeting, visit us on the web at www.rationalist.org.
We've cleared off the table, leftovers saved, washed the dishes and put them away. I've told you a story, tucked you in tight at the end of your knockabout day. As the moon sets her sails to carry you to sleep over the midnight sea, I will sing you a song no one sang to me. May it keep you good company. Oh, you can be anybody you want to be. You can love whomever you will. You can travel any country that your heart leads, and know that I will love you still. You can live by yourself, you can gather friends around, you can choose one special one. And the only measure of your words and your deeds will be the love you leave behind when you're done. There are girls who grow up strong and bold. There are boys quiet and kind. Some race on ahead, some follow behind, some go in their own way and time. Some women love women, some men love men, some raise children, some never do. You can dream all the days, never reaching the end of everything possible for you. Don't be rattled by names, by taunts, by games, but seek out spirits true. If you give your friends the best part of yourselves, they'll give the same back to you. Oh, you can be anybody you want to be. You can love whomever you will. You can travel any country that your heart leads, and know that I will love you still. You can live by yourself, you can gather friends around, you can choose one special one. And the only measure of your words and your deeds will be the love you leave behind when you're done. Yes, the only measure of your words and your deeds will be the love you leave behind when you're done.
Okay, we are back now. This is WOZO 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I forget to stop the music each time. Okay, this is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm here with Ty and Riv.
Hello.
Hello, Riv. Hello, Ty.
Hey!
Hey, there he is.
What's my name?
Tyrant.
What is my radio name?
Oh, you're Wombat.
Wombat.
The Wombat.
The Wombat.
Okay. We were talking about why atheists care about what you believe. And if you'd like to chime in on this conversation, our telephone line is open. You can reach us at 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937. The topic tonight, as I said, is why do atheists care what you believe? Christians and others always say our beliefs are private and personal, but then they try to push their beliefs through every kind of medium there is into the lives of other people.
But you don't mean all Christians. You just mean obnoxious people who happen to be Christians.
I'm talking about the vocal minority, I guess I should say. But
okay.
The non-vocal majority pushes or supports those people through funds and time and just general verbal support,
voting,
and emotional
definitely.
Support and voting.
Yeah. And also by ignorance to an extent, too. Like, they may be inadvertently just building so they can feel good without realizing what the money's being used for.
Right. And we're reading from the digitalfreethought.com blog, Why Do Atheists Care What You Believe? And we're about halfway through the article. It says, when it comes to spreading their beliefs, they don't hesitate to break the law sometimes. They illegally bring boxes of Bibles and religious tracts to schools to give to our children. Propaganda which tells them that they and their non-believing parents, the children, are going to hell and burn forever, which also says that any unruly children should be stoned to death. Religious leaders know that when this is religious leaders know that when this information is given to children in a school setting, it appears to come with the authority of the government education system, and therefore carries much more weight in the eyes of those impressionable children. Christian teachers then try to lead Christian prayers in our children's classroom, which is an unconstitutional endorsement of religion by government. But do they care? No, they have no qualms about disrespecting the beliefs or non-beliefs of others as long as they get to promote their belief system. The more non-believers they discomfit, the better. And where do you go with that, Ty?
So I'll play advocate, devil's advocate on this. Mm-hmm. If I go to a school back in the 50s or something like that where I'm being raised and I want to be a teacher when I grow up, and my teacher's praying in the class, and most likely the kids in my class in the 1950s are going to look exactly like me.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm black, it'll be a black class. If it's white, it'll be a white class, etc.
Uh-huh.
But for the most part, there's not a lot of metropolitan area, so I'll be going to people. I'll be going to school with people who very much agree with whatever mindset I have. And then I grow up. I go to school. I go to college. I get my license, a degree, and then I start teaching. I will be conducting prayers very much the same way how I did when I was a kid, but I won't be doing it with an idea of what I'm doing is illegal and unconstitutional. I'll be doing it as, well, this worked for me, and I really don't see any harm for it. I don't see myself as a bad person. And for the most part, I'm not aware of anyone who has different beliefs than me, but if they did, they would really benefit from prayer as the same way as I did when I prayed.
Yeah.
So what's the problem there? It's a very... And it's an innocent, but it is a dangerous but also innocent premise, because you mean the best going forward, but you also are stepping on other people's personal beliefs at the same time.
Right. Just on that very note, it is indeed innocuous, I think. It's insidious unintentionally, because if you grew up thinking that way, that's not so much a matter of... This is just a different type of belief. It's more a line of, well, this is reality. I'm not too concerned about the science. It's not a concern for me, because it can be explained away by a matter of faith, and anything unexplained is just something that you have to have enough faith, and it'll reveal to you over time, in your time, and so on and so on. So, kind of exactly it. I think there is some intent to it, depending on the situation, but I say overwhelmingly it's just regurgitating what was done during their childhood and so on and so on. And
It is very much regurgitation.
I agree on all that, but I don't take your point of them being innocent as you do, as innocent as you
do.
I think that the laws have been in the news and part of the news, and the exceptions that the people are trying to take and the money that the schools have lost over these infractions are very much in teachers' conscience now. I mean, if they go ahead and do prayer anyway and they go ahead and say that evolution is bull, they're doing it with the conscience of let's say rebellion against the laws that are in place, and they don't
care.
Sure, but
here's the distinction. The distinction is they don't believe innocent only in the sense that they don't believe they're causing harm. They know they are breaking maybe a rule, but in the same way as a person who's driving down the highway and the speed limit's 50 and they may go 55 or 57, they may push it a little bit if no one's watching. Or someone who drops a piece of trash on the side of the street, but it was like gum or something like that, and they're like, I'm not going to pick up gum, birds will eat it or something like that. They will do things they know are bad, but they don't think cause much harm. And so in the net...
Well, I'm sure they think they're doing good.
Right, that's
they
just
think
the point.
Justified.
They think they're doing what is proper, and even if it costs them... Even if it has personal cost to them, they think they're doing what is right by the children, mm-hmm. what is right by society, when the very problem with that is that they're going off of what they've been taught in most cases just by following the narrative. Mm-hmm. Less percentage of people actually look into it.
I could take it a step back. Maybe they don't even think they're doing something right. Maybe they just think they're doing something natural, as in, this is the way how I've been naturally taught to think. And naturally taught that day when I'm in a class.
Well,
I'm just projecting it forward without much thought on the moral quandaries behind it. It's just, this is how I naturally am, and this is how I naturally will speak. And no one's ever corrected me or checked me before, so obviously I must be on the right path. Yeah. I don't really have to think about whether I'm justified or not. I'm just doing what I've always been.
That could be true, but I have actually heard lawmakers who know better say, I'm following a higher law. You know, this is man's law. I'm following God's law. And why are they in Congress in the first place if they aren't going to uphold the oath they had when they took office to protect the Constitution? Because that is the separation of church and state is part of the Constitution. But they just find what they consider a loophole when they say that they're following a higher law.
It's the danger of religion.
Yeah, which they knew about when they took the oath. That's what burns me.
So what really is the thing is, regardless of whatever the teacher thinks, they have to know that there is a separation between church and state. That's particularly when it comes to teaching kids. And when they cross that line, they're putting themselves directly at odds with what our Constitution was founded on, what the country was founded on. But when they see examples of, like, their congressmen fighting it, when they mm-hmm. see examples of their pastors, who they look to as an authority figure, in direct connection to their ultra higher power, when they see their preachers advocate that people should go out and proselytize, when they see their congresspeople who they can't have an opportunity to vote for shift the narrative of America towards Christianity, they themselves see themselves possibly on the same front, or at least on the end of, like, well, I mean, I'm not passing a law saying gays can't get married. I'm just telling kids that, you know, evolution has a lot of problems with it, and Christians and scientists haven't figured out 100% of things yet. Like, they don't feel maybe that their ideas are as a front to rationality as what they see their higher powers doing, if that makes any sense.
Okay. Continuing with my article, Christians pass laws based on those Bibles, which make laws which make women second-class citizens in their own country and attempt to limit their reproductive rights. We talked about misogyny last week. The misogyny of the world's holy books teach that women have half the value of man, or less, should stay quiet, tend the home, and not seek careers for themselves. Some religious countries even keep women from getting an education, voting, or driving cars. They teach that women provoke their own rapes, and that they are responsible for the sexual attack, more responsible for the sexual attack than the man. And in some theocracies, will even stone the raped woman to death for the crime of adultery. Of course, that's more in the Islamic countries right now, in the fundamentalist countries over in Africa, North Africa. However, it's still, women are second-class citizens here, and so many have been taught in church and at home that they are, should not speak, should cow down to the men, like we talked about last week. Men have to report to Jesus, but women have to report to men or be subject to men. It's right on down the theocratic line.
So, again, just playing advocate for sake of conversation, I noticed that a lot of times when I'm reading the paragraph, you go back and forth between saying, like, Christians do X, but then you also say, like, some religious groups or religious or world holy books say X, Y, Z. Sometimes, are you always referring to Christianity? And if you must not be referring to, like, modern forms of Christianity. Because a lot of people who, like, started up, say, more recent Protestant movement, or, like, Mormons would have different ideas of how women and men equate to each other, particularly in households.
There isn't a religion out there that equates the rights of women with men. There's not just not one.
I could make a Christian just as easily, just saying, and by the way, now this is a new form of Christianity where men and women are equal. Like, you can go down the street my hometown,
yeah,
and every block there will be a new church, and they all have different rules.
Well, do you remember me saying that Muslim men and Christian people who follow those religions can be productive and good members of society in direct proportion to how far they leave the literal teachings of their religion behind?
Yes.
If you start a new Christian church and make women equal to men, then you are farthering yourselves from the literal teachings of the Bible, where a woman is twice as dirty for twice as long if she has a female child than she does if she has a male child. You know, it's just right on down the line.
Yeah, absolutely true. And it seems like Christianity has recognized that and realized how out of fashion that is and have modified themselves to become more modern. And by doing so, stepped away from, like, the core, whatever you can call the core beliefs at the time of Christianity, since it was based on Judaism anyway, which had even more harsh rules. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you'll see it constantly evolve. But you have Christians now. The whole point is, like, we have listeners who are Christian now who aren't aware of any of the things that you're referring to, because in their church they say everyone's equal and God loves everyone equally.
You know, something also has come to mind. There's this, we were actually talking about it recently at a meal after a morning meeting. The public perception most commonly of Christianity is different than Christianity. When people say, oh, you're Christ-like, or people say, what a good Christian, the social perception of that is ones we traditionally associate with good moral values and justice and so on thing. But the literature doesn't stand to match it. And
no.
So when people say things like Christ-like, and when you go back and women in the Bible, and there's this big constant tap dancing of compartmentalizing that. That was this Testament, and that was this, and we've modernized. You know, that was culturally relevant for the time. But Jesus himself said he came back, not one iota or tittle will be removed from the law. I'm going to bring a sword to pit mother against. You know, if you do not love me, you cannot love me if you do not hate your mother and your father, and so on, so on, so on.
Yeah. The thing about it is, too, that no matter how enlightened or progressive your movement is, the books don't change. They never change.
No.
And, 100 years from now, you can have another regressive regime come up. You can have, remember the Muslim Spring or the Arabic Spring, when everybody was all up in the air about, you know, we're going to be able to vote, we're going to be able to free ourselves from the dictatorial regimes that we've had, and it was going to be a breath of fresh air? Well, what did they do? Mm. They ended up voting their imams into power. The people that they listened to because of their, you know, their religious teachings. And of course the imams are just another form of dictators that pushed them right back into the 6th century.
Well,
they no longer
have
any power.
I mean, look at America. We have the exact same thing happen here. We had a big social justice movement with people saying, you know, we need to recognize many different excluded minority groups, and we need to be more aware of people and women's rights and equality of men and women, and here's a good chance to have more women in office.
Right.
And we put a billionaire male white landowner in charge of everything, and he has very counter-progressive ideas, and that's the reality that we'll be faced with, too.
Right.
We see it in both cases,
Now, you remember back in the 60s, you can remember some of the pictures shown of Iran and Iraq, women walking down the streets in short skirts and embracing the Western democracies and all that. But when the Muslim Brotherhood came along, they took the same old book that people theoretically still believed in and supported, like our moderate Christians do today. They had moderate Islamist believers then, and they took that same old book and shamed them into doing the things that are in that book, and now the whole society has regressed to the point where it's not even recognizable compared to where it was in the 60s. And that's what could happen to our very society if we let that type of thinking take control. And that's what I'm very worried about here in the next 4 years.
Okay. Just so I can say a quick little thing, the whole thing is when someone says, I'm a Christian, and they mean it probably, particularly women who told me this, they're basically saying the word, I'm a good person, or I have a set of good morals.
Yeah.
Whether they got it from the book or not is completely irrelevant
to
them.
They're not telling you
typically
anything.
Typically as an atheist, you'll be more... I tend to notice that atheists tend to be more knowledgeable of what's inside holy books than the people who subscribe to them.
Right.
And because of that, there's a dissonance between what they're saying and what I'm hearing, and what I mean when I say Christian might be a different thing when someone says I'm a Christian.
Right.
And so we have this stark parallel between Christians wanting to push their movement forward without having a very good understanding of what it's based on.
Yeah.
That they have more or less humanistic principles that they aren't willing to admit can exist without a higher supernatural being controlling everything.
Right. Most of the people...
If we can come...
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. That's more or less the point.
Okay. Most of the people that are believers that think of atheists think of us as a group of people that is rife for being evangelized, because they think we're non-believers. We need to be told about the good news, and we need to be brought into the fold. What they don't realize is most atheists, not all of them, of course, some were born into atheist families, but most of us are post-religious. We have been through religion. We've been there and got the T-shirt and graduated pretty much. So when they come after us with, you just need to read your Bible. You need to know more about Christianity or Islam or whatever. No, no, thanks. We've been there. We know what it's like. We don't want to go back, basically.
The best book to be an atheist is the Bible for a lot of post-Christians, for the most part.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to have to finish up this article and then make a few announcements for the station and stuff. Anyway, going back to the article, it says, the worst part of this is that the religious fundamentalist terrorists, these are people not only who blindly follow the letter of the barbaric religious teachings to the letter, I've got a redundancy there, but who cannot allow other more progressive citizens to live their own lives, like in the Muslim Brotherhood. And we're not just talking about Muslim terrorists here, but Christian terrorists as well. Examples include Northern Ireland terrorists, the Army of God, the KKK, and abortion clinic bombers, and the missionary-taught African homophobes and witch hunters. The very reason that we have to suffer through the long lines of security in airports and courthouses can be laid directly at the feet of these people. All of this does not even address the hardships and downright atrocities that the children of some of these religious believers have to suffer through. Faith healing instead of real medicine. The crippling discipline and severe punishments based on not sparing the rod. the mental cruelty and severe restrictions placed on their education due to religious homeschooling, and the mental anguish suffered as a result of telling them that any non-Christian friends they may have will be tortured forever in hell. When religion shared power and control with the government, like during the Dark Age, we had 1,000 years of intolerance, bloodshed, and oppression. We cannot, we will not, stand aside and let that happen again. The time when atheists will sit down and shut up is over. The dialogue has been joined. Let us all get involved. And if you'd like some more information about why atheists are angry and will no longer be quiet about it, please do
do a
Google search on Greta Christina's blog post on atheists and anger. This is why atheists are angry and why they have every reason to be so.
Some atheists are just frustrated and wanting to have a productive conversation.
That's true. That's so true. They are, like you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so let me make one little community event. It says, if you have a community event and would like a public announcement to be made on Wozo Radio, please create an MP3 to reflect that event, and then contact us via our website, wozoradio.com, to arrange for it to be played in our rotation. Okay, go for it. I'm through with my announcements.
One quick question. So North Korea has come into the news recently, particularly with comments on what our new president's like.
Mm-hmm.
They are a country, though, that has banned any kind of religion. And they are strictly no church, or strictly separated between church and state. In fact,
church is completely outlawed
in that entire country.
No.
You cannot legally have a Bible or anything like that.
I want to tell you where you're wrong. You're talking about North Korea?
All right.
The government is the religion.
The government is the religion.
The lead person of the president of the society is the dead president.
Kim Jong Un, or
the father,
Kim Jong Il,
and even though his son or his nephew is the existing president, the living president, they actually have a
necrophagy, something
like that. Instead of a democracy, it's a necrophagy. Because their president is a dead man and a god, and their current leader is a god. So the government is the religion, and
so
it's not an atheistic religion.
Sure. And before we run out of time, I will say here's one country that has outlawed everything except one kind of religion.
Right.
You have Sweden, for example, that has the highest per capita atheist. But they very much do have a relationship with the state church. They do pay taxes to that church.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have America that serves separation of church and state. But throughout our history, we've never been completely separated from Christianity. And even at the inception of church and state as a moniker, we had enslavement of black people and many other kinds of travesties to human rights and so on. So, like, where is the perfect balance? What is the ideal state? Do we have atheist control everything, and then have everyone abide to atheist rule?
Yeah.
What is the ideal state, at least now that we've finished this talk?
Who knows? We don't know, that's for sure. Everything we've tried has had its problem, but it turns out that the most peaceful, most productive societies on the planet today are like Norway, Denmark, the Netherlands, and those are... they have a state church, although very few people go, and it's a socialistic type of environment. I mean, you have public education for free, the health plan is for free, all people have total rights to everything. It's just, but they have very little religion, even though they have a church.
Yeah, and also another thing about that is not even so much about with religion or without religion. It's the type of society. It's the type of cultural saturation you have. So in a lot of parts of Europe, you have more democratic, socialistic type societies. And case in point, if they have a state religion and paid tax contributions to it, and it's mingled and everything, but they're not all running around doing all these horrible things. It's it's the society, it's the saturation. So mm-hmm. the United States is a different case, because it's all about the society. And we have growing, thankfully, more free thought and more breaking away from religion and some fall back into it and so on. But it's the expansion of thought and the more freedom and kind of confidence to step outside the bubble and start questioning things. So over time, given how powerful and capable this country is, over time, I think it's those will have more of a shift towards that direction.
If we're lucky.
If it could, it's a pendulum. It's definitely
right. Yeah. And since we're so low on time, that will have had to have been your final word.
All right.
And Ty, do you, Wombat, do you have
that's
final
my final word,
word
too?
Huh?
That's my final word too. Great job, Ed.
Oh, is it?
Oh,
very well done. Okay, this is Doubter 5, and my final word is that everybody's going to some other religion's hell. Don't sweat it until they prove that hells are real and souls are real. Yep. You know, live this life the best you can. We'll see you next week. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour here on Wozo Radio, 103.9 LPFM, live in Knoxville. Have a good week.
Low power!
Yeah. I laugh, but then I